Welcome back to Misunderstood. So last episode we were chatting about kind of just excellence and excellence leaving the country. Today we're being a bit more controversial. I don't think it's controversial. I think it's the truth. I think it's fact. But I think we're giving our opinion to black spaces. Well, not black spaces directly, but creating black spaces in places that were originally white or places that were potentially very diverse. I mean, it's going to be interesting because I think there may be things said that may hurt a few individuals. It may be sensitive, but I think that's the whole point of this. The whole point is to be a misunderstood. So let's have it. But how are you doing, Leto?
Yeah, I'm doing all good. I'm excited for this one. Hopefully we say not the right things, but the best things.
That's true. I think I kind of want to open this conversation up with a bit of contextual background. And I mean, for me, I just finished reading Malcolm X, the autobiography, and now reading Steve Biko. I mean, two things that they both promote was segregation or anti-integration. Yo, English, it's already running away. But essentially, the conversation was that the best space is black space. Now, Malcolm X is very different because towards the end of his life, he becomes a Pan-Africanist because he recognizes that there are genuine white people, but the genuine white people just don't exist in abundance. And he believes that unless you're a human being who wants to be integrated, wants to live in the exact same life and sees past the race and has no racial bias and simply wants to be a part of one whole thing, be unified, that's when integration exists. Steve Biko, on the other hand, I mean, personally, I just think he stole everything Malcolm X said and put it in a South African context, but whatever, that's me, is pro-integration, anti-integration, pro-segregation, because he believes anything that has the influence of white individuals is not progressive. He says that white individuals and black individuals should work separately, but to the same goal. Now, these were ideas that existed, if we talk about Malcolm X, almost about 60 years ago. If we talk about Steve Biko, we're talking about 50 years ago. Ideas that were once very prominent, lived very strongly, and to some extent we've integrated. But there's a question about what happens when our spaces become black. In South Africa, I think it's painting out in a very interesting way as certain private schools become more black. I know with the private school that I attend, the prep school, I think, is majority black now. And people are starting to ask, is the school still going to be standing in the next 10, 15 years? Some of this might be skepticism. Some of this might be your own personal beliefs. But that's what we're attacking. We're attacking what happens when our spaces become our own and whether or not we believe they're going to stand.
Yeah, I think it raises possibly sort of two scenarios. The one scenario is, are people who are not black scared that more black people cause something to lose its value? In which case, you know, that's a serious conversation that needs to be had, because that affects really how we see people, more for their color than, you know, what they can bring to the table. Because, you know, looking at the workspace, schools, there's a lot of more than qualified black individuals to fill those spaces. So on a, you know, quality of person, what they are bringing, it's not any less than what someone else could bring, right? And then the other aspect is it maybe a matter of, do we need to build black institutions? Because what I often see is that either you'll get the school of thought that says that, okay, these institutions were built to exclude black people, so therefore we need to almost take them back, and people want to go and into already successful institutions, whether that's, you know, in finance, in sport, in schooling, they want to go there. And, you know, it's that first black mentality, we're the first black people to do this, and then more blacks come after you. Or along the same school of thought, they say these things were meant to exclude us, let's build our own institutions from that. In which case the other conversation comes, that are we good at building our own institutions? Because when you look at the institutions that we have gone into, there is a case to be made that, do we make them better or do we make them fall apart? the biggest institution being government. No, that's a mostly black institution.
Yeah.
And it used to be functional to a certain degree, but now it's not functional anymore.
I think true. But I think there's two questions that I think I ask myself. The first being that when people speak about government, does it have the same connotations that many other institutions do? Because two things can be true. Is that one, I think people are always in a lookout for themselves. But secondly, people have to do what they think is right. I think to a certain extent, I think it's fair. I think there is accountability and there is a fault from many of the black individuals who exist in government. But is that fault only existing because they're black, or is that fault existing because they are essentially prominent political leaders who have stepped into a government that was already fair? And I think that's for everyone to answer their own personal belief and own personal question. I think where it becomes more important is like what you're saying, is that do we have the ability to build our own institutions? Which I think is the question we've been asking for thousands of years, not even hundreds, thousands of years. Because, I mean, we speak about the prominent leaders, we speak about prominent individuals who try to build their institutions, but it's about whether or not you'll actually have the backing. And I think one thing that I've seen that still remains true is black individuals don't trust each other, which makes it impossible to build an institution from the ground up, because fundamentally they don't have the willingness to just work with one another.
Yeah, and I definitely think there's, you know, a big part of the problem is that. And the other part of the problem is the fact that black institutions did exist, you know, before settlers arrived and stuff. Black society had all the things necessary to build it. It had a spiritual system, you know, it had its own economic system, and it had its own social structure. So it's not to say that capability was never there. The capability was there. That's how we built our societies, right? Of course, like every society, it has its imperfections, but we built societies that lasted a while.
Yeah.
And then obviously when people came, things changed, and they may have destroyed those structures.
Yeah.
Right. So maybe the case is not that we are not capable enough to build those structures, or that we're not trusting. It's that over multiple generations, the way in which we would do those and build those structures has been broken. And so then the way in which, you know, we learn how to collaborate, to build things, has been lost over time. Because that's a skill you need to nurture, right? It's like if my family had a plumbing business and each male in the family was going to be a plumber and headed up at some point in time, right? If at some point one person decides, okay, I'm not going to do plumbing, how, me as the child, how am I going to gain that skill? How am I going to attain the institutional wisdom, right?
Yeah.
So in the same way with building institutions, in maintaining them, in running them over multiple generations, you spread the lessons down. And people also learn that this is what you need to do. So if a long time ago those lessons were purposefully stopped from being, you know, passed down,
yeah,
then obviously we're going to come a point in time where we don't know how to do those things. We need to start from scratch. But I think then the first point of call is, there's this sort of idea that I like, that I've been applying in life. It's, they say, you know, you look back to look forward. And what it essentially supposes is that people have done things for a while. People know what works. People know what doesn't.
Yeah.
But also people have that wisdom with them, right? So you don't always have to look forward and do things a new way. Yeah. When there's already a way that works, you can maybe just improve upon that way, but you don't need to start from scratch. And I think countries like Singapore have been good at this way of thinking. You know, also them, their institutions were destroyed. But they said to themselves, yeah, okay, let's go and look what makes things successful, and let's build that in our own country, in our own city, you know. And we can, yes, we can integrate some things that are done in Western society, but we can also do what works for us. And they've been able to build their own institutions that way. But for us, I think the thinking is always like, one, how do we make it African? And then the question is like, what is African? Do we know what that is anymore? And then the second is like, people want to be new and different, when it's like, you don't have to be. You can maybe look at what works and build upon that idea, you know. But again, you know, the question of how do we build, that's not the first question most people ask. Most people look at what's good already. When you look at schools, no one's asking themselves, let's go and build a very, very good private school that can compete with the best schools in the country.
Yeah.
People say, no, you know, the best schools in the country already exist. Let's try get ourselves there. And then they fight to be the best in that space.
Yeah.
Right. Same with workplaces. They're not like, let's go build a bank. Right.
Yeah.
And make that work for us. They're like, let's go to a bank that's already set up and do it for ourselves. And then the problem comes is that at some level, these institutions were not made to satisfy certain people's needs, particularly black people. Right. Mm. So one, you can't fault the institution for saying that's not the direction we want to take, or that's not what we want to do, because it was never built for that. Like a lot of these private schools, they were never inherently built for us. So when people say they are racist, they're this, that may be true. And that's something that we need to mitigate, right? But also bear in mind, these places never intended for a person like you and me to sit in a classroom and learn, number one. And then number two, it's like, because of that, why do we never entertain the fact that, okay, let's go and build our own things, because then we can build it to what works for us and what's best for us. Because then that whole thing is in our hands. But if we go to institutions and want to change the way they do things to fit our needs when they were never intended to fit our needs, that's where the conflict arises. And I think that's where you get into almost this whole idea of white flight, that as more black people enter a space, more white people or people that are not black leave that space, because different cultures require different things from institutions. We go to schools, we expect, of course there'll be similarities, but we expect different things to other people. And so when we demand those things, it may mean we have to take away from the other things those people want in their own spaces, right? So then they say, this space is not working for us anymore, and they leave, right? But then, again, because we're not well-versed in how to maintain and build an institution, we end up not managing it well, or there may be other external factors that we're not aware of, the institution collapses, or at least degrades.
Yeah. I think that there's truth in that, in the fact that many of the time we aren't actually aware of what actually happens in the back. We arrive in institutions and we expect them to essentially function the same way as when we arrived, and I think that's untrue. But I think secondly, more importantly, which is kind of a conversation I had with somebody who is a black student in, I think, the late 80s, early 90s at one of these all-boy private schools, is that they don't have a clear set or mindset on how they want to think or what's of importance. And that's creating issues with the generations that are coming after them, but also within themselves. Because I think now, as it stands, as we see more people, and especially black individuals, come through private schools, we don't care for the same things the institution used to care for. Most of us do get there and we're like, we just want to be there for the education, and everything else feels like it's being placed upon us. But secondly, there's no real reason to have anything beyond an education. And the reason I say this is because I think one of the things that has been interesting is, if you look at private school kids, especially black ones, right? I think there's two things that always come up. One, they are whitewashed in the sense of they're not connected to their culture. But two, they have a nonchalant attitude. Now, I guess the question then, where it becomes hard, is that, is it because of those two things that the institution starts to degrade? Because I think for me, as it stands, is as much as a lot of these institutions have white flight, these institutions remain white. And there's black students who are attending these institutions in the masses, but when you look at their teachers, the majority of them are white. The headmaster is going to be white. The board has a lot of white individuals. You might have the chairman of the board being a black individual, but they maintain their control and their power. And is that a thing of that people don't believe in us, or is that a thing of we think white individuals are still trying to hold on to their institutions?
I think it speaks to, you know, what goes into making an institution what it is, and also the power behind certain facets of an institution, right? It's the same with government, right? We think that government is simply just politicians.
Yeah.
Government is businesses behind it lobbying, funding these guys. You know, government is also voters making decisions. In the same way, and maybe even to some degree more complex and sort of more multi-layered than government. When you go into private institutions, you get into the politics of boards, of donors, mm. of stake, like it gets hectic, right? So I think more often than not, we think just because we are there as students or as whatever, then that's the only way we exert influence.
Yeah.
When meantime, there's bigger places where influence is exerted. And maybe until you cover all those spheres of influence, you can truly dictate a path that something takes. But until then, one thing I've seen with, especially with schools, you know, conflict brings stagnation.
Yeah.
If two groups cannot agree that this is where we want to go, then they sort of grind at, you know, one place. And, you know, it's better to go somewhere than nowhere, because then at least you know where you're going. And so, you know, if two groups are at a conflict, it then becomes about destroying the other group. And in the process, yeah. it could become destroying the institution itself to destroy the other group. You know, the institution becomes the collateral for that. So maybe it's that, you know, whether that's in neighborhoods, whether that's, you know, in schools and companies and whatever, it's like as we enter that space, a conflict arises between two groups of different races. And those two groups have two different priorities. Because they cannot agree on those priorities, that conflict that rises, you know, escalates to a point where the collateral of that conflict becomes the institution itself. It
yeah.
becomes the school. It becomes the neighborhood. Mm. You know, people are saying, in protest of these people, we may not be able, or we're not going to pay state fees. Now the state can't maintain things because
yeah.
they're trying to drive these people out. Right? And the other side says, okay, fine. Since they're doing that, we're going to do this. And then it compounds the issue. Right? So maybe it could be that a symptom of the issue, of the institution degrading, is not necessarily just black people entering the space, but it's a conflict that causes both groups to sabotage the institution as a way of driving out the other.
I mean, yeah. I guess I find it hard, because I mean, like, and this is probably gonna sound weird, but like, when people protest and they destroy their own institution, I'm always like, you're stupid. You're like, what are you doing? And I think there's truth to that, because people would rather destroy the institution and not recognize the future for what could be when they claim that institution. And when, by the time they claim it, the institution is done. There's barely a classroom, wars are done. But I think the question, and I think it's an interesting one, also part of being in connection with a lot of black students, is how much of us are actually bringing our capital back to that institution to keep it alive. Because as it stands with a lot of these private schools, one of the biggest things is donors. Recently have been pulling out. Some may argue it's because of the influx of black students. I don't necessarily believe that. I think if we look economically, being a donor has become essentially another financial burden that if you don't have to bear it, you won't. But also, like, you mustn't lie, our economy has been in a recession, which also means people don't have access to the same amount of funding. And it's also true that a lot of those people that we talk about, especially being black people, don't have access to the same amount of capital that are many of these white individuals who, rightfully or wrongfully so, have had capital for quite a long time. So I guess it's about how do we keep these institutions open, because as it stands, capital's not coming in as a result of the older generations. The newer generations, which you could argue are falling in love with their institutions, are loving what they've been able to give them and the opportunity that they provide, potentially might come back. And then there's a third category, the category I personally believe is kind of the category that private schools, in my personal belief, I think are very immoral in, is the category where they give scholarships with the expectation to receive 20, 30 years down the line for individuals to essentially be almost thankful for the opportunity, but thankful through finance. And I guess that begs the question of, are these institutions preparing themselves for black capital influx, or are these institutions simply not sure what's going to happen and therefore are trying to plan for the worst?
I think, like you said, you know, the nature of the economy is such that it's trying times, so people will do what they can to keep their institutions afloat. I don't necessarily think that, you know, there's a malicious intent with specifically giving people scholarships with, in the hopes of getting money back. I think a lot of institutions, not just private schools in South Africa, but universities across the world. I mean, if you look at the endowments of some of the biggest universities, you know, it's sort of this blind expectation that in exchange for our reputation and what we can give you, you impart some of your funding or your wealth to us. And then almost in a way, the cycle repeats itself again, that in the case of the big US universities, they may not use the endowments the way people would want them to. But in other cases, they say the money that we get from the donors, we put back into the operations of the school. And then the cycle repeats itself, right? But I think it speaks to then a bigger issue of, if it requires that much to keep certain institutions afloat, you know, and particularly when we speak of private schools, for me, it points to a problem of, then there's a bigger issue of just schooling and education not serving the needs that it must, you know, because if the need is that to keep this private school open, we need donors and we need other things, the school just can't keep itself open through fees or whatever. For me, it shows that we obviously know there's a problem in education in South Africa, right? And so people with money will go to places where, you know, they can get that quality education. But then now, even if those places are struggling, for me, it points back to the original issue. We need to fix the broader scheme of education in the country. And when we bring it back to what we started this conversation on, institutions in South Africa, or just black institutions, education itself is an institution. And it has not been managed or maintained well at all, right? The fact that now even private schools are starting to see the problem shows that, you know, greater change is needed in that domain. Otherwise, this thing is not going to survive. Because for me, I look at it like this. A system is always going to have inequality to some degree. There's always going to be someone who wins and someone who loses. We just want to manage to what extent the winners win and the losers lose. And we also want to make sure that the gap between the winners and losers is not so big that it creates a fundamental problem in the system itself. And also that there's enough people that are just between that, that the system can maintain itself, right? So the problem in South Africa is that there's too many people, or there's too little people winning and so many people losing, right? In whatever way you look at it. And so when we look at creating institutions, we need to balance that, right? We need to say, yes, we acknowledge that even if we create the most ideal education system in the world, there's still going to be people who drop out. There's still going to be people who don't leverage what that education can give them. Those people we can't avoid, but we want to make sure that those people are as small as possible. But right now, it seems like when we build our institutions, we don't have the whole in mind. We have the few. Because private schools, now at least, are catered to the few. Their operation costs are increasing, and there's only so many people who can carry on affording that. Because you've got the problem of people immigrating, but you've also got the problem of less people are being able to afford that because, you know, money is tight at the moment. And so you see that problem in a lot of other areas, right? If you want to start a business, less people are able to do that because of the economic conditions. More people are deciding, let's go somewhere else to start a business or start a life. Or some people are even deciding, let's close up shop because it's just too much.
I mean, I think then, I think two questions come to mind, firstly, because I think the first part is like, in the context of South Africa, where 95% of your population loses, right? How do you build institutions without people losing faith? And then the second one, I think, is more just about when we talk about black institutions, who's the burden on to fund it? Because as it stands, I mean, I think a lot of people always have to make the way up of how much am I willing to sacrifice of myself and give of myself to ensure the next person can win. The next person doesn't have to lose to the same extent, right? And I think to play devil's advocate here, a lot of white people are saying, look, to be honest, we're not losing out on an institution. Well, sure, you lose out on the historical value of an institution. That's true. Because the more black people that come in, the less traditional value you have. Air quotations. So they all go to another location or they choose a different private school. And the cycle keeps continuing until they realize there's not enough private schools left to carry on doing that. But then what's left with that is you're left with black individuals still being able to pay, because I still think there's a well, as much as the numbers are decreasing, schools are closing down, which means for the top private schools, there's a surplus of individuals. The question becomes, does that surplus always exist? Or does that surplus say to themselves, we need to start building for ourselves? And does building for yourself mean that you're competing at the same level of these institutions? Or does building for yourself mean that you have to make concessions along the way to ensure that the gap is closed between your winners and your losers?
You know, I think one thing about a lot of the great institutions that we see now is that they took time to build. You know, the best private schools in the country, the best businesses in the country, we can't expect them 5-10 years. They're going, like, if we started something now, it would be at the same level as some of these places.
Yeah.
So I think the first acknowledgement is that institutions take time to build, but it's a double-edged sword. The longer you take to not start an institution, the longer it's going to take, even when you start that thing, for it to become successful. So you want to do it sooner. True. Rather than later. And so with that, it's that idea of, you know, one who plants a seed cannot expect to sit under that tree shade, just because there's time and a process to make that thing what it is. But on top of that, you know, it's also the whole idea of, yes, I think there is still a large surplus of people who could probably pay for private schools, majority of them being black, because not as many black people are leaving the country.
Yeah.
But then for the schools, it becomes this, right? The conflict is like, do we look after ourselves financially and say we're going to accept these people who we only accepted in smaller batches? Mm-hmm. Or do we say we want to maintain our history and culture and what we stand for, so we're still going to limit it to this because these other people preserve our culture better, right? And so in a case, it's like, are they choosing survival or are they choosing pride?
True.
And it's funny because you'd be surprised how strong pride is.
Yeah.
Right? Pride is a very strong thing, and some people say let it die rather than let it change, you know. But then again, I still would say, when it comes to building institutions, you asked, you know, sort of whose burden is it on? I think it's the burden of the community. Because if I start a business, right, ideally your community should be the one that supports you first. You should say, if I open up a bakery, right, yeah, and I open it up in like Parktown North, and the community of Parktown North, you know, they're there, you want to say, hey, I've opened up a bakery, y'all are gonna come eat here, right, for breakfast, you guys are gonna support this thing, because you want to put money into the community, you want to see it thrive.
Yeah.
But I found that when most people think about that, they think that, but what if the product or service is bad, right, and there's a better product or service we can find somewhere else? Yeah, well then you tell the person, this is how you make your product or service better, so that it can be better than that other thing, because it's not always going to be better. I can't remember who spoke on it, but this guy was like, that's sort of what the Jews do, right? Mm. They'll still buy from their you know, from another Jew, because even if the thing is not better, but then they're gonna tell the guy, like, listen dude, that guy over there has got a better thing than you. So to make it better, you got to do X, Y, and Z. You know, they give feedback into it. So if we're building our own institutions, it needs to start in the communities. And the communities are not always where you live, right? Because if you're at a workplace, the community is not, like, no one from work stays in the same area most of the time. So, you know, the community might be a group of different individuals that come from different places, but converge on this one spot or idea or whatnot. So you got to look to your community first to build that idea, and your community also needs to be invested to make that thing grow and be better. Because even the best schools in South Africa, when they started, they were not considered the best schools in South Africa. There were some mission schools started there by the church as like a side project and whatnot. Then maybe a few boys or a few girls would go there, nothing crazy, you know. But as time grew, the vision expanded, the community helped this thing improve. Money, resources were put into it, and it grew to what it became. So in the same way, we got to treat our institutions the same way. It's how I feel about South Africa's problems, right? I think even if we were to start constructively fixing them now, 10 years down the line, we're not going to be in paradise because they're just that deep. But it comes with the patience to say, well, maybe we might not live to see the day where the issues are fixed to the point where we live in a prosperous society.
Yeah.
But that's what happened in every other country. I'm sure the desert dwellers of Dubai in the 60s and 50s, they're not seeing what it is now.
Yeah.
But they took the necessary steps to get it there. And so that's what I feel it has to be. Unfortunately, we're not like first world countries where we can sit and say, you know, the people from behind us, they've made those sacrifices, so our institutions are good now.
Mm.
We, especially as Africans, you know, our institutions are relatively new.
Yeah.
Especially as South Africa, our institutions are new in terms of who's managing them and how they work in the democracy, not necessarily how old the thing is itself. And so if we want to get it to certain states, it's going to take time, right? Like, look at certain democracies. They took so long to get to where they are. And even then, they're not the most stable. So as Africa, it's kind of hard to expect that after a few decades, we would have got it mastered already.
I mean, true. And I think there's truth in that we have to wait. We have to essentially be calm and be willing to sacrifice for something we won't see. But like, I hear people at the same time going, but there's so much volatility within a black community, which I think private institutions holistically, in terms of financially, are asking the same question. Because one thing was true when COVID hit, wiped out a good decent amount of families, black families and white families, but black families mainly. And the question that rose from there, I think the question that always rises for me is, how do we build communities when we can't trust that we'll financially be standing in the same place tomorrow?
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing with institutions is that they're not always economic or political.
Yeah.
They're social institutions as well. And one of the big problems in the black community is that so many social institutions have collapsed. So like the nuclear family has collapsed. The black father as a symbol, as a role, has collapsed. You know, so many social things have collapsed in black communities. And so, you know, it's also hard to say, you know, just put money into this community or put money into this business and then it will grow by itself, even if the community supports it. Because it's like, there's a whole support structure that goes into that thing that makes it work.
Yeah.
Right? So I feel, you know, part of looking at black institutions also involves looking at the social institutions as well.
True.
You know, we need to have a talk about, you know, fatherless homes and the effect that has on kids. Because those kids, male or female, are going to be the ones that you want to start businesses, you want to become professionals. But we know there's certain effects to not having a father in the home that produces unideal consequences in the future. And so then how can we expect those same people to build and form part of these ideal institutions that we want to have, right? That's not a fair expectation on them. And this is not even a South Africa-specific problem. You go to a lot of places across the world, if social institutions collapse, and I don't mean, because it goes into that whole thing of values versus tradition, customs change. Right? Customs change all the time, but are the social values that keep that community intact there? The customs may change. So for example, it might be like, you know, in previous years, the man was the head of the home and would go and work. That's a custom. But what is the value there? The value is there needs to be someone that's providing some sort of financial or material support to a family.
Yeah.
So we can say, okay, the value, we need to keep the value there. Someone needs to provide for this family, right? But does it always need to be the man, or does it need to be the man alone, right? Because now we find it's a lot of women. So many people will fight against the fact that that's changing. But I think it's like, we need to look at what value was keeping those things in place and making them good customs.
Yeah, I think that holds true, because like, there's a lot of good community values that exist within Black culture, and I think they stand out, especially in white institutions, because I think that's a part of why people come together. They're able to find each other in the values that I don't want to say are unique to Blackness, because I don't think they are. I think white people can attain some of those values, but it's a very unique value which comes with the Black experience, and those two things have been able to work together. So in these institutions, people are able to find their space, their footing, their stepping. It's just that at times there's a lack of leadership or a lack of value for a certain thing, which allows the institution to fall flat. And then what becomes of importance then is really just about how everyone else views those institutions. Because in my personal belief, I believe Black institutions are essentially should be our next best thing. So, and actually not even the next best thing, but they should be the best thing. Black institutions should be the things that we're looking forward to, that we're going to. The issue is that we've equated Black institutions with essentially a lackluster of leadership. And that's what's caused a lot of lack of faith within these places, because we speak about things that Black people essentially love. Black people love church. That's one thing we all know stands and it's truthful. The biggest issue with churches is not the values or the systems or the things that are in place. It's the person who leads the church. And that becomes a Black identity, because then people see another Black individual stealing from their community. So it's, how can you Black people essentially look after your own community when you guys steal from each other? And we forget many of the time that it's one individual within an institution that kills an institution. And I guess it's about finding a way to ensure that we don't get short-sighted in what we're doing. Because I think in many ways, even if we look at the very most prominent individuals, when like I mentioned in the introduction, Malcolm X, Steve Biko, both of them were feared leaders, not because of anything beyond the fact that they were stern, but they were also very transparent and very true to who they were. They weren't going to be the leader who was going to steal from them. They spoke honestly, and they ensured everything in which they did was for the community, by the community. And that value seems to have been lost, or seems to be in lower numbers, which is creating an extreme mountain for Black communities. Because as it stands, it's really just Black individuals within spaces like white institution, where white flight exists. White people aren't really scared. Okay, fair. Some white people might just be scared of Black people. I think that's a blatant, that can be a blatant truth. But there's white individuals who aren't scared about Black individuals being in that institution, but they're simply scared of the volatility that exists between Black individuals. Because, and I think in part there is some to blame on our history in that Black individuals always seek power because they've never had it. But at some point, we as a community have to get to a point where we're building institutions regardless of who's in charge, who's in power. As much as that's hard, and I know, and I think that's where a lot of the institutions take time to build, because then we find who's in power, we find who to lead us and everything. We need to find a way to essentially assimilate as one and be unified in the ways in which we progress and build our institutions.
But I think that's the hard part about building an institution, is that you have to do everything yourself. Not everything is there for you. You know, if you're building a company versus going into one, if you go into one as like a CEO, you know, all the structures are there in place for you. All the legalities, the administration, everything is there. You're simply running the ship. And that's vastly easier than, you know, going and saying, I'm going to start my own company, and then you're responsible for building all those things by yourself. Right? So I think part of it is like acknowledging that it's not going to be easy building those institutions, and mistakes will be made along the way. But again, I think that's where that looking back to look forward approach helps, is that we know, okay, if you do things in this way, this is the result it produces. Obviously, you need to put it in your own context, but you know that, okay, if I go about this like this, the effect we produce is not ideal to where I want to go.
Yeah.
Right, so first we need to acknowledge, okay, it's going to be hard, But there's been people who've tried this before us. They may not necessarily be African or black. Doesn't mean we can't take advice from it. But, you know, if we go about it that way first, it will help. But I also think that it might not even be a race thing, you know, white flight. It may just be, it may be more on class than it is on racial lines.
True.
And I look at that in communities, right? Because the race thing might not even be, because when you strip down race, it's simply just a pigment.
Yeah.
Right? No one's going to be like, you know, really groveling on you for just your race alone. Like the fact that your skin color is just different. There's some that might, but very few. Their core issue is not just going to be that.
Yeah.
Right? For them, it might be the difference in values, the difference in cultures that may come into play. And those things can exist between black people. One thing often heard in black dialogue is, especially, you know, dialogue in the diaspora, they don't acknowledge that black people are not all the same. I'm not the same type of black person as a person in Kenya would be. Even in Kenya, the difference between tribes, even in South Africa, the difference between me and a person from another tribe could be more magnified than the difference between me and a white person.
True.
Right? So we also got to put things into those contexts to say that, well, you know, maybe part of the conflict is the fact that we keep on seeing each other as the same thing that has the same values, that comes from the same part, which in many cases might be true, but not always. You know, and particularly in an African context, we're not America where really to trace your genealogy, you need to go so far back where it's like, I don't even know anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's just reaching now. It's like, no, there's clearly defined identities within blackness in South Africa that make people fundamentally different. And on top of that, when you get into class, it's like, and maybe that might be the thing that causes certain black individuals to also work against more black individuals coming into a system, is that as you enter a space, you adopt its values to sort of increase your survivability in that space. And so when you look at communities, it's like, okay, I live in like Sandton now. People like Sandton are averse to more of these kinds of people entering the community because they want to preserve this sort of view and value of what Sandton is about, right? So they're going to push away these people from entering. So now me, if I want to be part of this community but also maintain the value that I also saw in this community, I'm going to adopt the same approach because I want to keep that thing's value. And so I'll push away people that might even look or be like me to do that. And so it might not even be racial. It might just be group psychology, you know? And I think maybe that's a big issue, is that we oftentimes mistake racial issues for group psychology issues.
Yeah.
And so we might say, no, okay, when white people leave a space, no, it's because they don't like the black people entering that space. When it might be like, no, given this group was all black, black people would also do the same thing. Yeah. Or take away the whiteness from it and see that this is just the human response, a social human response to what is happening here. And so we misdiagnose the problem. And so then the problem might not necessarily be that, you know, black people themselves struggle with building institutions or even maintaining institutions once they entered. It might just be that we as South Africans don't know how to enter spaces and collaborate with people that are not necessarily of the same background as them, you know. And so I think then that changes the conversation a bit, because then it's like, yo, maybe let's not talk about blackness and whiteness in a space. Let's talk about values, traditions, customs in that space, because that's the bone of contention.
But then isn't it just the thing of whoever arrives first is going to claim that it's their space and therefore no one else should enter? Because, like, I think there's truth in what you say, in the sense that there is no unifying black thing, right? And we make our thing that we are black, so therefore we should be one. And I think that now that you say that, I actually recognize that it's probably one of my biggest shorts, like, that I always assume because you're black, you have the same struggle. Then I'm like, whoa, actually you don't, because you're not from the same, you don't have the same experience. You might not be from the same background. And we might be looking at life from different aspects, depending on how we perceive the world, how we came up in the world. But then the thing becomes is that in all of that is, where do we find our unity? Because, like, I think there's truth in that the first black person in the community is going to be like every other person in that community, because what they saw, they want to preserve. And we can assume they want to keep preserving it, but then there's somebody in that community who says, I preserve this community because this community was people all from the same background, potentially could have been white, right? So that person leaves, they open up space, and essentially, I guess you get a cyclic thing of, you get to a point where it's all black individuals, then it's about which kind of black individual are you? So then it's a different shift of people. But the question still becomes then is that, how do you get to a point where people aren't preserving those values to the point where they can't build institutions with each other? Because it's within that black institutions that white flight happens, that we aren't recognizing there's a lack of value or lack of principle that we share with them or that we can attain, or that we have as a body of black individuals that we should attain to essentially keep a space the same. Because in short, Nhlanhla Lux tries to do that with the Soweto Parliament. His belief is, we'll protect our own community because it's our own community. And that's someone trying to install a value of, because it's ours, we should protect it. Should black people be doing the same thing? And can black people do the same thing without starting at their commonality being that they're black, and their commonality maybe being that they have the same or similar values?
I think then, you know, the solution is rooted in everyone coming together for the good of whatever institution they're in. Because that's the only common thing. That's the most common thing you'll find between people. You know, again, if you go to a workspace, what's the most common thing people have there? Is that we all work for the same company.
Yeah.
And so the benefit of the company serves the benefit of us all. The same way a country. There's so, like, when you look at a country, there's so much differences between the people that make up that country, be it geographical, class, all these things. But what do they come, or sort of, what does an ideal nation try and do in its group thinking? It's to say that the good of the country and it being the best it can be is the benefit of everyone else.
Yeah.
Right? So despite your differences, we all work towards the good of the country because it can all benefit us. So I think maybe then a starting point is then going to the institutions and saying, especially if it's like a school, everyone there, priority number one, good education and keeping the school's reputation up, right? So then you say, okay, all of us want this. We may disagree on how we want this, but we want this nonetheless.
Yeah.
So on some level, that makes us share a common goal. Now, how can we then work on that common goal in a way that doesn't destroy the same place that we want to see work? Because like we talked about in the beginning, if the institution itself takes the collateral damage, then that's an unideal situation.
Yeah.
But then if you make the institution the common point and the thing that you want to improve or make better or maintain, right, then it cannot be the collateral, because then that's deliberately working against what both parties agreed on. So if you make the place itself, it's almost like insurance, right? It's like if you were to insure something, the insurance company is going to make sure by all means that thing doesn't get messed with, because then they're going to have to pay it out.
Yeah.
So if you make the institution you want to make better the place that you don't want to mess with, right, then people are going to leave it alone. And even if there is a conflict that arises, it may be something that won't collapse the institution itself. And so maybe for now, that's the best thing we can come up with, you know, or the best way of joining people. So we can say, yes, all South Africans are different, and we come from different backgrounds and we're different people. But I think one thing all South Africans can agree on right now, everyone wants power. You know?
Yeah.
You're not sitting there saying, oh, okay, because I come from Joburg, I don't want power. Or because I come from Bloom or something, I don't want power. Or I come from Cape Town, I don't want power. Everyone wants power. Right? Also, everyone wants functioning government services.
Mm.
So everyone wants the dustbins to be collected, everyone wants water to be there, crime to be stopped, all these things, right? No one is saying, I do not want police, unless not wanting police works to their benefit.
Yeah.
But on the whole, everyone wants similar things. So then we join together in that purpose and we say, to achieve those goals, let's look at the best way we can do that together, right? The way it is now is that everyone agrees on the same problems and wants the same things. But then what the parties do is they divide you. They say, no, 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 but these guys are doing it like that, or these guys are doing it like that.
Yeah.
We need the person who's going to do it the best, right? So in the same way, when we look at our institutions, the protection of the institution and the good of the institution must be at the forefront to build that institution always. Like a business. If you have a business, you're not going to do anything to sabotage that business.
Yeah.
And you do that because you know that that thing needs to grow. And if I sabotage this thing, it's not going to grow, it's going to collapse. But we don't do that for other institutions, for example. For schools, it's okay if we're willing to, you know, maybe trip this thing up a bit, as long as it fits our long-term goal, right? But if we all center on the same thing, then I think we can be there.
So, I think that's true, because it really becomes about what is the solution and who best fulfills the ability to do that solution. But then it still leaves a huge question of, at what point do you reach an agreement that you guys are all here to preserve an institution? Because I think it's the same thing to some extent it also exists for why white flight exists is... And I don't know how I feel about white flight as just a concept, but in essence, white flight wouldn't exist if black and white people could agree that we are all trying to preserve and love the same institution, right? And for some or for many, it could be a thing of that there's too many individuals, mainly black, who come into the institution seeking power, which I think is true for everyone. I think the majority of us, power hungry, but black people will go to larger means to get that power. Why would then institutions, or when institutions, or how do institutions find that middle ground, that agreement? Because is it a conversation? Is it a realignment? Is it a change in perspective, or is it time that says to individuals that we actually all see eye to eye and we all kind of love, care, and share the same thing?
I think it's maturity more than anything, you know, because maturity is recognizing that the point at which I'm at, I don't always need to be self-serving. There's some things that are greater than me at this point in time, right? And so in certain scenarios, I'll learn to put my personal interests to bed to serve something that's bigger than me in the moment. And maturity is not a political thing, it's not a social thing, it's an emotional thing.
Yeah.
And a mature individual has cultivated that through learning, you know, from experience. And so if we are to do the same, in our current state, we are not a mature country, if I'm being very honest. And that problem is not going to be solved through policy or anything political. It requires every South African emotionally to assess themselves and to move in a way that shows that we are mature. But that takes time, but that takes learning from our experiences as well.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what separates a lot of other countries, is that they're a lot more mature. Now, of course, we can say, I don't think to any degree there's a completely good and mature government that exists in the world. All governments, to some extent, are immature and, you know, are also self-sabotaging to the people they serve.
True.
But there's levels to it. So we can say, at this level of maturity, this is what's possible for us.
Yeah.
And if we can get there, then these certain things are achievable. Because at some level, you know, I'm sure the American government recognizes that if they were to operate in the same way the South African government does, certain things are just not possible. And certain things would collapse. So despite the fact that we know they have their own problems and they do their own nonsense, but they know that we need to at least function at this level to ensure these things are in place. And that requires an almost nuanced level of maturity, because instead of saying looking out for selfish needs, they're almost saying, I want to do bad, but I know if I do too much bad,
it'll
then
go bad.
Yeah, so yeah, let me not do too much bad, and I'll still do some, but not to that level, yeah, so that certain things can work. And maybe that's the best we got. I think so many people expect a government to be good. In the modern era, there's no such thing as a good government.
True.
Maybe we can look back in other places, in other times, to say this is a good government. But maybe that, for me, I don't know in the modern era if that exists. I don't know if we can ever count on a politician morally. What we can count on is that this person might have the foresight to say, if I eat too much here, this whole thing will collapse. And that's worse than if I eat a little, but these other things still happen. And that's sort of what I saw in Europe. Because it was funny, we were cold there, right? Because it was winter.
Yeah.
And they were having the energy crisis. And for me, I almost thought of it as, if these guys mess around with their power and don't properly maintain the institutions, they're going to freeze to death.
Yeah.
So the politicians might make a lot of money, but people are going to freeze and die. Like, if we didn't have heaters inside our houses, it was, on average, it was like -8 degrees, you know, at a time. If you don't have a freezer, I mean, if you don't have a heater or anything to warm you up in the house, you're dead. And that requires energy.
Yeah.
So I think for these guys, it was, you know, the acknowledgement that the politicians might want to steal the money and might want to corrupt the power institutions. But I'm sure they know that, like, people need to be warm. Otherwise, people are going to die. That includes us. But obviously here, you know, obviously the context is different. But to sort of apply it here, it's not as cold here. In winter, you know, you don't have a heater. You have a blanket. You can survive.
Yeah.
So it might, they might not be that understanding that if I eat from this thing, the power's gone and I'll freeze to death. Whereas in Europe, that's a thing. But what I'm trying to get at is that mindset, you know, to say we have to forego doing certain things because to live a basic life and to have certain amenities to make our quality of life good, we need to hold ourselves to certain standards. And until politicians do that, until people do that, even until business people do that, I mean, look at stuff like that Gold Mafia documentary and things.
Yeah.
You know, I don't agree with you in the sense that black people are corrupt more. I think everyone's corrupt the same.
No, true.
That's the one thing I love about South Africa is that we're equal in corruption more than anything else. You can count on an Indian white person or black person
or to be
more, to be just as corrupt as the next. The only thing that makes the black person look more corrupt is that there's more of them.
Yeah.
So that's about it. But everyone else is corrupt just the same. So until everyone says to themselves, okay, guys, listen, we see these people are corrupt, but there's certain things that we all want to have, like power, like safety, like all these things. I'm sure even, you know, the corrupt of the corrupt, you don't want to walk on the streets not knowing if someone's going to rob you or not.
Yeah.
No one wants that.
Yeah.
As bad of a person as you might be, right? So there's even things that the criminals and us could agree on to say, hey, we all want these things. But then we say, the way we operate currently is very immature and these things can't happen until we do X, Y, and Z. So you criminal, you're going to have to stop doing this thing for us to have this. And also us as people, you know, one thing South Africans like to love about, you can pay a cop off, you know, if you were speeding or whatever.
Yeah.
In its bare form, that's corruption. But we all laugh at it and a lot of people actually participate in it, you know. So if we also say, okay, we're also going to have to stop doing certain things as people, even though we're not criminals, we're not going to do those things because if we do those things, we're perpetuating this way of life. And so we can't have certain things. Then in the hopes of bettering the institution, the greatest of which being the country in this context, we have to make certain sacrifices. And those sacrifices come with maturity. But until the country is mature, and maturity defined as willing to forego certain actions in the pursuit of a greater good that is outside of yourself, until it can be mature to that degree, then I don't think there's hope.
I mean, fair. Because I think, like, one, that's true. Trust everyone to be bad. And I think that's kind of the takeaway I get from this, is like, to a certain extent, we all have an evil side to us. No matter how much of a saint you actually think you are, there's something in you that's willing to do bad, participate in bad, that will be bad. But second to that is that for us to function properly, or function at a point where we at least live a decent livelihood, we have to be willing to give away something, is also very true. Because I think as it stands now, is the entire conversation doesn't exist to say that integration is impossible, segregation is better, white flight is a problematic thing or a good thing. The conversation simply states that we need to find a common ground, or need to at least come to an understanding about who we are and where we are, to essentially function as a society. Because yeah, you can't carry on running. Black people can't carry on expecting things, and we just can't keep destroying institutions, because then no one benefits at the end of the day. So as it stands, it's about us being human, us being with each other, but also us finding unity, not with each other, but unity in each other. Because if we're able to do that, if we're able to find a common idea, we'll be one step closer to functioning normally. Whether fairly, I think, is a completely different conversation. But yeah, that's been me.
Yeah, good chat. Obviously, I mean, the topic gets so nuanced, so yeah, there's only so much you can cover in so much time. But yeah, I think for me, it's the key is that emotional maturity as a country. Can we get there? How soon? And if we can do that, you know, then we're our foot's in the door, at yeah, least in trying to make our institutions better. Like we said earlier, these things take time.
Yeah.
So I think it's unrealistic for South Africans to say 5 years from now we'll be in a very good state if we start doing the right things.
Yeah.
No, that's not going to happen. The problems are that entrenched that it's going to take way longer than that. But the sooner we start, the sooner we'll get there, and the better it will be for future generations and even ourselves if we're lucky.
As per usual, I think it's have a conversation. Speak to someone, speak to your neighbor, and just allow time to take its course. As much as it's hard, allow it to be. But as always, this is Misunderstood.